At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
All right. And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have independent director Jason Pitts. And of course, I also have Olivia, independent actress Olivia, with me. Say hello to everyone, guys.
Hi.
And thank you, Triton.
Hello.
You can go ahead and say hi.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't want to interrupt anybody. Oh, hi. And I don't know what in God's name is going to come out of my mouth of asking questions. So I will do my best to keep it PG, John. Right. I'll try.
Okay.
I'll try.
I do appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, I'll do my best.
Look at the film we're reviewing. Do you have to keep it PG?
Like, not really.
No, not really. No.
Our film is R, or yeah. It would be R. Film was rated.
That's true. I didn't think about that. Oh, that's a good point.
That is very true. And I do appreciate you guys talking about Masquerade. That's right. This is going to be the interview that we've been waiting for since Crichton and I reviewed this film. We love this film. You know, guys, I want to know this. And this can be for Jason and for Alicia as well, Olivia as well. My question is this. When it comes down to characterization of the character, how was it easy for you to snap into that character, into that place that you need to get into for that darkness of it? And how were you able to get yourself out of that place that you were in as well? Was that hard to snap in and snap out of it? I want to know.
Okay. So getting into it was a process. I feel like by the time we were ready for filming, like on our shoot days, I'd already reached that point to where I could easily tap in. But that's from like vigorous research and reading over the script a million times. Obviously Sylvia is a tough one, and she's not a normal person to portray. So I really had to like do research on like medical diagnosis as well. So I diagnosed her. So I'm a nurse. I'm a registered nurse. I haven't, I got my NCLEX in July, like got my license. And I really was interested in her mental health, and that's really what I focused on too. And then like did my characterizations or personalizations around what I felt like her mental state was and why. So Jason and I created like reasons as to why she could be the way that she is after really identifying what people are seeing from her. So I definitely think she's a sociopath. So I was going into the deep dark web and watching a lot of like people and characteristics of them and what they did and what their family noticed about them when growing up. And I watched a lot of interviews of people that were in mental health or mental hospitals that are like auditory and visually hallucinating with like schizophrenia. And then just to see if, and I actually worked in a mental hospital for one of my clinical rotations as an RN. And I just kind of used that experience. I used the interviews that I saw just to see like if they really like would respond to a person that you're seeing, because that was in the script. So I did a lot of like medical data research on that end. And then as far as like portraying it on camera, it came real natural. Like I felt like I had that freedom because I knew who she was. I knew her personality. I knew why she was hiding. I knew what she wanted to accomplish in every single interaction that she had in that film. And even if like my objective was to not show it, I knew exactly why she couldn't show it. So every word that I even did this in my script, like every sentence I broke down and it had different actions in that sentence and sometimes more than one action. So you guys are only like, she's smiling at Clint, you know, in the beginning, but inside, she's feeling like 60 different things because she knows what's about to happen and she knows what she has to show in order for it to happen successfully. So it was really just like delving in and making sure that I knew the scene, that I knew the objectives, that I knew her. As far as checking out, that was hard. I literally, so the set was far. It was like 3 hours from my house. And I remember one time specifically, I rode the entire time in silence. And I didn't even realize until I pulled in and I was just like, I wasn't listening to the radio. Am I psycho? Like, that's weird. That's a weird thing to do. But I realized like how in character I was. There were times like we would call cut or, you know, another scene would be starting. And I just wasn't able to just like immediately switch over, especially for the torture scene. That was so long. That was so emotional. That was so physically demanding and emotionally demanding and mentally demanding that once like cut happened, like I was still her for a little bit. And that's weird. It's like, it was like, I couldn't interact with the people that were on set around me as Olivia yet. So it was a process. It was a process of getting out of costume, getting out of makeup, and then eventually being like, okay, nice day on set. Bye. So yeah, it was a lot, but it was amazing. And I felt like that's a character that I want to continue to like play, but in different levels and avenues. And horror is my jam.
Horror is definitely a great genre to get into and everything, to be honest with you. And also too, I can definitely tell, I didn't say this in the review or anything, but I could definitely tell that you were dialed into that character and everything too, because of the way you were playing off of it. But also too, I could tell you did your research. I could tell that you went in and knew the kind of character that you need to play, and you played it to the T. You ended up playing this woman that is internationally known, but also not only internationally known, but also looks like that she needs to be in a psych ward though at the same time, especially the way that you're smiling. Not you, the character. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I think that I love that though. I love that balance that you bring to it. You bring a life into that character of where Clint doesn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. We don't know what to expect either. We're like a stranger visiting her, just like Clint is. And Jason puts us in that spot. And we're feeling fear for that character. We're not sure where this is going at all either, because we're expecting your character to be the victim. Then all of a sudden, the home invaders are actually the victims. And we're like, okay, we're conflicted. Should we feel bad about the home invaders or feel bad about her? So that is something that I really like.
Yeah, when Jason and I talked about the character, I was like, I need someone like Baby, which, you know, whatever. And just someone who makes you love them, even though they're psycho. So that was my only goal, is like, let's figure out how I can find this justification and give it to the audience in whatever way. And eventually you can't make excuses for it. But I think that there were a lot of moments in there in so many different scenes where you saw her and you saw her desperation. And that was something that I had to like find within that script and within her and find those triggers so that you guys could see it a little bit as well as the audience. So you could be like, oh, has she ever been seen? You know, so I was just hoping to fight the good fight for Sylvia.
You definitely did a great job. I think that Crichton has some questions for you, though, too, as well.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, me, I'm like Jason. I've been making movies for so long that, you know, the audience, you can really tell when there's not only chemistry with a good actor or actress that is doing their job, but it's everybody, the whole cast that just... It's like you're watching a family almost that's just full of artistic abilities, you know? And it's like, oh my gosh, it's like a bunch of orphan artistic people that are together making this wonderful show. So was it like that for, and this is going for Jason and Olivia, was it like that on set making this particular film that y'all did?
Jason, you go first.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, and not just this one, but like the entire Alone Saga has been like that. Alone was like that. Masquerade was like that. And a lot of the same cast and crew were also on Voorhees, and that was like that as well. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of the family that we've built. And I think that when this is all said and done, I think that's probably going to be the thing that is going to last forever, you know, is these connections, yeah. Relationships that we've built, and these great movies that we made together. So, it was exactly like that. And yes. I'm glad that it is coming across on the screen.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was, to be honest with you. I could actually tell that everybody feels comfortable in their own way, and everything too. I feel like everybody knew what they needed to do, even behind the scenes. Everything just seemed to come together smoothly because you can actually tell on screen. People can tell. You're not going to fool the audience. If they know that there's no chemistry, there's not going to be any chemistry. If there's drama on set, you can tell that even though the actor or actress is bringing out their A game and their acting chops, you can tell that there's some tension there. It doesn't matter what you try to do. It's still going to be there no matter what.
Yeah.
And my other thing is this, like, Jason, I ended up watching an interview that you did recently, and you said that, and I think it was Alone, where you said that you didn't really get the darkness of the vehicle and stuff like that, where you can actually see everything. With this one, I feel like that you did a good job with getting the lighting perfect this go around. I could actually see everything within the car and the situation in the car and that darkness of them waiting for their friend to come back and do this home invasion. I actually felt the tension, the small and everything, where it just slowly builds. And then once it's there, now you're locked in this house with Olivia, who's about to do some murdering. But, you know, I just want to say the lighting for this movie was fantastic. You did a fantastic job.
Yeah, that's all Charlie Brady.
Charlie is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was our director of photography for Masquerade and for Voorhees, and he's coming back for Lonely Echoes. But I just tell that guy what I want and he makes it happen.
So we were talking about chemistry. Like, I felt so comfortable with Charlie and what he wanted to do with the shots that it gave me so much more power in my character also. And I feel like that's something that a lot of people don't get to experience, because I do feel like with a director or a DP, like, it normally is a passive relationship between like the lead and them, because it's just, I'm here to do a job. You are too, you know, blocking and that's it. But, you know, Charlie was so creative on set and very much like, it's like he recognized when I was just going to like start doing my thing. Cause a lot of the torture scene was me just like walking around and doing stuff that was not scripted at all. I was like, there was a lot of movement. There was a lot of things that I had no idea that I was going to do, but he recognized it and he caught it all. And I feel like that's someone that's so talented, but also like a crew that's so connected, because how were we able to capture things like that? And a lot of the stuff that's in the final edit is actually like it wasn't something that I rehearsed or planned on doing. So it was really cool. All the actors are so incredibly talented. We've all worked together before. They're like family. And yeah, it was amazing. And I think you can see that again, like you said, in a lot of the scenes, especially the scene, like, I feel like CJ and I had a thing like where so much of our like just trusting each other came through, and he really like, I don't know, like there was just moments in there that you could never write down in a script that happened and that you guys got to see. I didn't get to enjoy it offset as much because, again, Sylvia, I didn't just like check out, but on Voorhees with the same cast and crew, it was such an amazing experience and a life-changing one for sure.
That's awesome. That's seriously great. Because it's rare that you actually get to hear stuff like that. And, you know, Crichton has a good family and stuff like that when it comes down to his direction. And it's good to know that Jason has that family-oriented feeling on the set as well. And it's just refreshing to actually feel that way. People don't realize this, though. Lighting can actually help amplify the character and also not only that, but it also amplifies the character and makes them do things that they don't normally typically do in the script, and it's able to actually do some kind of improv as well, improvisation, which is something that I really appreciate whenever actors and actresses do that.
And with Olivia, like, what makes her in my opinion, and I've said this from the very first time I saw her work, I think what makes her on another level is the first thing is the amount of preparation she does. Like, she just went into it a little bit. And what you guys heard is just, trust me, just a little bit.
Yeah.
The amount of preparation she does is absolutely phenomenal. And so when she comes on set, she knows who she's becoming. She knows the character to the point where she does these little micro expressions without even realizing that she does it. And it's amazing. And you see it all through Masquerade. I saw it the very first time that I filmed a scene with her. And I knew it, and that's the difference, is the little things, you know.
Thank you.
You can go through the motions, yeah, and you can put on a great performance, but it's the little the little micro expressions here and there that just really bring the character to life. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the best I've ever
Thank
seen.
Thank you so yeah. much. Yeah. Thank you.
She's phenomenal, to be honest with you.
Oh, really. My gosh. And I wanted to do this interview. Yeah.
I'm glad. I'm not trying to get you to have the big head or anything, but I'm just keeping it real.
Too late.
So any actors out there watching, do your research, practice in the mirror, get those little micro expressions down. Mm-hmm. Little twitches here and there, like a little half smile, just anything. Get that stuff down to the point where you know your character, and you just kind of do it without even knowing you do it.
Right.
But I'm gonna bounce it back over to Crichton and everything too, because I know he has some. I can tell when it was mine.
Sorry. I'm like, dang, I'm getting into this. Like, wow. All right. So I want to know. This is just coming from a director's point of view, right? Mm-hmm. And this is going towards Jason and Olivia. So, when you're filming, it's what people would say, it's just kind of like film magic. You know that this is the point that needs to get across, but sometimes it just blah, blah, blah. You get the point across, but it's in your own different way. So did y'all have like any of that when shooting this film, or was it kind of like, nah, let's just stay to the script, or, well, just get the point across and let's see what happens.
So when I'm filming, I'm not married to the script. In fact, there's times, like there's a specific example I can think of right now on Voorhees, when a certain character said a line and I called cut and I asked the actor, I was like, would your character say that line? Because I'm not feeling it. And he's all like, no, I don't think so. And so I asked another character who I was like, what about your character? She's like, yeah, my character would definitely say that line. I was like, all right, you're saying that, but we're going to do it again. So yeah, I just, like, when you're in the moment, like that kind of stuff usually comes out in table reads and stuff. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it doesn't come out until you're there on set. And I think you have to be able to be fluid and kind of flow with what's happening while still maintaining your vision and your story. And, I love collaborating, and I'm not like a director that's like, it's got to be this way, we're sticking
right
this way. And that just that's not fulfilling for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did that answer your question?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I feel like that's like one of the best things about being on set with them, for sure, is just like, I know that I have that creative freedom and I am able to like be vulnerable and explore within the character. And then some is just bad. It doesn't turn out right. But then some is just like, you couldn't have wrote something like that. So I really like that freedom that I get. I think it's important to still understand like what this character is needing and the objective and what you're fighting for, and understand the writing of the script and why this was placed here so that you can accurately, you know, ad lib or improv or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I also feel like he's good at recognizing who can and can't do that, because I think that that's really important for directors as well, to recognize how your actors work best. Some actors are not going to feel comfortable with that. And once you push them outside their comfort zone, they could shut down. They could, you know, step out for a little bit, not be as confident, which will read. So I think it's important to, like, he knows kind of how to talk to this person. If someone's not getting their line, but they probably don't feel comfortable with improvising, I think it would just be, hey, let's go through this real quick and figure it out. Let's call, you know, script supervisor, go over lines, whatever. But if it's someone who knows that character, he trusts, you know, their improv, then he'll be like, okay, what are you feeling? Let's roll.
Mm-hmm. That's great, right, though, because, you know, I actually was helping Crichton with his script. I was the editor for his film and everything. And I was like, you know what, maybe we should do it, say it this way. He goes, you know what, that's not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I know it's going to get changed later on because the actor's like, you know what, I have an idea that this character won't say that. And that's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. Because if they, because that actor knows what the character needs and they know what it needs to bring. And if they know that it's not, they're not feeling it, then also too, the audience is not going to feel it. Yeah. And you need the audience to feel it. It's just not about the actor either. It's about the audience and what they're going to bring into that character as well to make the audience care about that character when they get axed off or when something else happens. So to me, I think here's the thing. I love characterization in characters because I feel like you need to have characterization. Without characterization, it just falls off and everything too. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't like a certain film was because the characterization was there. I was like, why am I watching this movie? Mm-hmm. I don't care about the characters. I don't care about the motivation. I don't care about anything. The plot is good, but from what's, and I always say this, I said, what's on paper might not always adapt to screen that well. Mm-hmm. So therefore you have to adapt it into the way it's not only as it written, but also to as an actor reading the off the pages of the script as well. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know what? It looks great on paper, but it's not doesn't fit what's going to happen on the screen. So we need to adjust it. And that's also a marker of a good director is bringing out the best out of their actors and actresses and everything. And that's going to be there for you and care about you and say, hey, look, this is not working. Let's change it up. Like Jason said, let's see what we can do here to better you and also better the character at the same time. And I like that. I like that about Jason. I have full respect for Jason and what he does. And I like what you bring to the character as well. I'm interested to see more stuff and everything, too, that you're going to be in. But, Jason, my question is this. The thing that I love about your films is I get to see everything in your films. It's not just a cookie-cutter kind of camera angle. I'm able to see the whole entire layout or something. My favorite camera angle is when you see the killer coming out behind Clint, and then you're able to get that shot. How are you able to get that front shot, but also at the same time get that back shot of that the home invader coming in behind Clint like that? Because I thought that was a really good, smart move whenever he's going into the garage to check on things. Yeah. Then next thing you know it, he's face-to-face with his friend.
Yeah. So we wanted kind of a moment there that kind of related with the moment in the beginning where you see the clown mask behind Olivia in the window. And even though it's already established that these two people are friends and you probably aren't going to worry too much about this man in the clown mask behind Clint, we still kind of wanted to mirror that a little bit. And it's just keeping in mind the 180 rule. And so we just did our best to frame that shot. And then once they both are in the garage, go from there and then introduce Lizzie and Jaron as well when they come in and have their conversations. And we shot that scene multiple times from multiple different angles. And then you hand it over to your editor. In this case, it was an awesome editor, Alex. And he just was able to make the scene work the way we shot it.
Awesome. Wow. And here's another thing I like about this film is I get to look at this film over and over again and find something new. For example, the clown mask looking out inside the kitchen area. I didn't notice that until my third or fourth time watching.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so I didn't catch that. But my other favorite thing is, I mentioned this in the non-spoiler review, is the music at the very beginning. And then also, too, it does feel like a masquerade, even though it's not a masquerade ball, it's a masquerade app. But there's this tango in the kitchen between the two of y'all, between Olivia and also the character of Clint. And there's this tango in this dance of, I'm not going to breathe any BS that this guy is even selling me at all. Right. Oh, you were in prison? Yeah, I was in prison, but you don't know what it was like for me. Well, boo effing who. I don't care.
Right.
And, I'm so happy you caught on to that. Yeah. That everything was in, all of that was intentional. We wanted the beginning there to feel like a dance, kind of a back and forth thing. Each of them feeling each other out, and they both have a secret, and they're both trying to just work each other over, you know. Right. And Dustin Yoder, he did the score. He's amazing. He's the one that came up with the masquerade dance. I kind of gave him an idea of kind of how I wanted the audience to feel throughout the movie in each scene. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, that's perfect. So
I agree. The music in this was fantastic. And also, too, as she's going in through the kitchen area, and she's and you see people being murdered, but you don't know if it's her or not. Mm-hmm. But she's making her, she's eating.
Yeah, making tacos.
Right, that's what I was about to say. Taco Tuesday. you just got done killing somebody. It's like, you know what?
Maybe.
I'm feeling hungry.
Yeah, you don't know.
Well, maybe you did. Maybe you didn't. I'm just going to men in black everything and say I didn't say that. But anyways.
Right.
But, you know, I love the music in it, Jason. The music is fantastic. And also, too, it has this Dexter kind of vibe of his morning ritual and everything. Yeah. And this is like Olivia's morning ritual of making tacos.
That opening scene, that opening scene was heavily inspired by two different things. One, the first one was Dexter doing these everyday things in a very like aggressive, weird way. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm glad you picked up on that. The other one was the opening to Blair Witch 2: Book of Shadows, where you just have these shots that are just intercut really quickly in a couple seconds by like a brutal murder. Like in at the beginning of Blair Witch 2, it's drone shots over the forest and the rivers, and just like during the credits, these just really harsh 1 to 2 second shots of these people just being brutally murdered, and you don't see anything, just really close up. So yeah, I kind of took Dexter and Blair Witch and kind of mixed them together there.
It works well, to be honest with you.
It does.
But I'm going to shoot it back over to Crichton and everything, too, on if there's any questions that you wanted to ask them as well.
Well, all right. So did either one of y'all have any roadblocks while filming this? That it was just like whether it would be this one particular scene or if it was just like, gosh, this one thing is so, but once it's done and then now you see it on film, it's like, oh, we did it. You feel like clapping, you know, type thing. Did y'all have any of those little, because every filmmaker does, but I just want to hear y'all's stories, you know.
So there's a couple things. The first one was I wasn't 100% sure that we accomplished what we wanted to accomplish with the opening scene.
That's what I was going to say.
The goal was to set up this strangers like situation and get the audience to kind of worry about Olivia's character, about Sylvia, this beautiful supermodel alone in this house. These people are coming in. What's going to happen? You know, I'm afraid for her. And then the dinner scene happens. And one of the things I was worried about is we kind of showed our hand a little too much in the dinner scene. Like she was a little bit too aggressive. But just hearing from you guys and from other reviews of it, I feel like we pulled it off.
Yeah, it was short enough to not.
A lot of you guys are like really surprised when she hit them with the heel.
Yeah,
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm so thankful that worked out a lot better than I felt like we captured. So
yeah, I just speaking on that one. I felt the same. I felt like, you know, we talked a little bit about just jumping into Sylvia. So by the time I was ready to be for, you know, us to shoot, it is hard because although I know that she can't come off as aggressive, I think that she is. She's thinking about how she's going to kill him. So that will translate in the way that she says things or the way that she's toying with him. And I think that she got a little bored with him, though, honestly. I think that his responses weren't, like, entertaining enough. And I think that shows with a couple of the characters. I think it happened with Lizzie, too. And you'll just notice my demeanor changes a little bit. And I think it's, like, when she gets annoyed, it's, like, all bets are off. Like, I'm done, like, mm-hmm. parading around now. Like, now my mask is off because I'm ready to kill you.
Well, that's a perfect example of masquerade.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Right, exactly. Yeah. She was just tired of pretending because this is her one night that she's set aside to not pretend. And I also, one thing that I was dealing with personally is it was actually at a really busy time. I was graduating nursing school. I was in my senior year. So the last semester, I was also filming two Lifetime movies all during this. So it wasn't that I was on set, but like I had just wrapped that and it was a lot. That I was very proud of, but all of it was very much demanding on me. So I was scared that I wasn't able to give my best in it. But then watching some of the footage or the dailies or whatever, I was just like, okay, I'm here. So I'm looking forward to an opportunity where like I can revisit her and I don't have nursing school going on at the same time.
Yeah. In fact, there were several times where after we were shooting, she would call me or text me and be like, I don't think we got what we needed.
Yeah. And I was so serious. And I think every artist says that I didn't feel her the way that I wanted to on some days. And I know why. I know I just had so much going on, but I knew her well enough, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can self-doubt ourselves too.
Yeah.
Challenge we had was one weekend, our director of photography, Charlie, got really sick. Mm-hmm. And he was able to be there, but I had another cinematographer friend come in to kind of run the mm-hmm. camera for him. Philip Pearson came in and thankful so much that he was able to come in and help us. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge to get through.
The sound.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So while we were shooting the scene outside at the end, with the cops, there was this neighbor who was basically in like a Hatfield McCoy type situation with the owners of the house that we were shooting at, and they don't like each other, and they would do anything that they specifically the neighbor would do anything that he could to just ruin the days of the owners of the house. So this dude set these big, huge speakers out on his front porch. Knew we were shooting a movie, could see us. These huge speakers out on his front porch and cranked his like music as loud as it could go. Gets in his truck and leaves and just leaves it playing.
And didn't we call the cops?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, he's on his property, nothing we can do.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had to deal with that.
And then we did ADR, but we lost so much of the day. So we actually had more shots planned, but ended up having to do those cut scenes at the end to mm-hmm. just kind of like put something in there to like make up for some of the things that were supposed to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like a last minute situation. Which
ended up working out.
It ended up being amazing and so much better.
You guys know the scene, the mid-credit scene where she's in Paris and she kind of goes over the night. That wasn't scripted originally. Mm-mm. That was what we came up with to kind of fill the gap of what we were originally going to put in there. Mm-hmm. And because of the sound situation and losing half the day, mm-hmm. we weren't able to get what we originally had scripted. And so Olivia and I came back months later and shot that scene. And I'm so thankful that happened the way it did, because that's one of the scenes in the movie.
I think it worked out really well for you guys. I feel like mm-hmm. it actually benefits y'all, to be honest with you, to actually mm-hmm. leave it open for another one if you wanted to do another one versus just wrapping it up in one single movie and everything too. I think that's actually perfect. I also
masquerade
like
the feature.
Yes. I like that.
Maybe.
But you know what else though? I like the fact that you know, you guys actually know what you guys were looking for and know the tone that you guys were going for. Also, like the callbacks to other horror films as well. I thought that was good. But before anything, Northern Entertainment Group actually has a question. He says, if you can sum up your experience doing this movie in one phrase, what would be that phrase be?
For me, it would be fulfilling.
Man, hold on. This is hard. There's, I would say enlightening. And that's one word, not really a phrase. Yeah, not really a phrase. So if I need to delve into more, just like let me know. But I definitely feel I'm more enlightened after experiencing Sylvia.
Most definitely.
For me, Masquerade is like, I got a little bit of it with Alone, but it's really, we all deal with the imposter syndrome thing, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, Masquerade is a huge step for me to kind of get over that. And Alone helped a lot with that as well. It's like, dang, you know, we really put out this a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But Masquerade, to be able to follow Alone up with another thing that's probably even a little bit better, just really helps me with the doubts, you know, in the back of my mind. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my other thing is, though, that I was wondering about is the locations and stuff like that. How did you guys manage to get the locations that you needed with the location scouts and stuff? Because I know that's also another thing too, is just finding the perfect location, trying to find out where to shoot at, because I know that this probably was filming during the pandemic. So I'm sure that that it was actually limited to where you can shoot at.
So Masquerade was one location. The entire thing was filmed at one house, except for the mid-credit scene. But I pretty much just like asked people that I knew, and a friend of ours, Amy Lynn Woodall, had another friend who had this great house like out in the middle of nowhere. And I went and I scouted it with her and talked to the owners. And they're like, man, we would love for you to shoot here.
They were so awesome.
They were so amazing. And you know, very hospitable. And it was, yeah. So that's how that happened. Finding the location for Masquerade was very easy. Mm-hmm. Alone was a little different. And I think Lonely Echoes is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to say, because usually with me, it's a lot of, please, oh God, just let me shoot here. I'll do whatever. I don't care, please. You know, so that's awesome, you know.
Yeah.
What were some of the other challenges that you guys had to face on the set as well? I know that you had to deal with the sound, with the blaring music, but what other challenges would you say that you had to face on this film?
I would say one of my challenges is actually presenting itself now, as we are touring our screenings and offering out the link to be bought virtually. I'm noticing that it's just not getting like shared as much or liked as much. So I've never really felt like I wasn't supported, because I definitely feel like so many people just genuinely are there and supportive of the career decisions that I've been making. But I'm just noticing it's not like at a time where filmmakers and indie filmmakers, we all experience it one, but this is like one of the prime times to really show your support and to show that like you're believing in our project and you're wanting to watch our work that we're doing. And that's even friends and family. Like our budget for Lonely Echoes should already be fulfilled if all of our family supported us 1000% and bought a link, a fire link, or you know, viewed it at a screening. So I think it's just recognizing that you just have to push so hard here at this point. And I definitely feel like this is a transition period for myself in my career. Like I'm ready for, you know, really a lot bigger things as well. So I'm just noticing like what I really have to do in order to reach those steps, because it's not something that's coming natural just in our Facebook groups on Arkansas. So I think it's just pushing and networking and getting out of your comfort zones, because relying on like just those people that support you isn't the only thing that you have to do. You have to do so much more.
Yeah. Right. Really, I started thinking about that too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, like, you know, just what you said, Olivia, one thing that was taught to me when I was learning about film, mm-hmm. you know, and I, you know, I'm old, I did it old school way, but this, the guy who's teach me, he always told me, he said, you know, more than likely it's that one stranger mm-hmm. versus all of your family and friends that's going to support your art.
Faithfully. When I tell you, I have like, I would say like hundreds of people that are consistently liking and reposting that it's really just been like an acquaintance type of thing, or like they just have seen a work of mine that come to my page, check in on what I'm doing, share it on their own page. Like, it, mm-hmm. one guy is like in Paris or something. And I think that's so crazy that it's literally a stranger where they're like awesome. Reposting all of your work. And then like, I'm like, hey, family, could you watch this maybe? I don't know. Give me some views. Like, it's fine.
It's pretty wild, isn't it? Like, I don't
yeah, know. I know. I mean, but I feel like I do that as well. Like, if I find, if I recognize talent or beauty in someone, whether I know them or not, I do try to faithfully, repost and share and support them. And it slips off with people that I guess you take for granted. So we're all like the same. We do it all. But I think it's just like making it known, like, and reaching out like, hey, this is when I need your support. So what's up?
Yeah. Right. So for Lonely Echoes, we are about to launch a massive, aggressive fundraising campaign. I'm going to try to launch it February 1st and keep it going for like 2 to 3 months. So yeah.
Cool. Well, you have my full support, and if you guys need anything, let me know.
Never mind. I was just thinking of like, no, never mind. Sure. Okay, yeah. So we were talking about challenges on the set. I just want y'all to know, I literally was, I was a part of another production that ended up not, you know, getting filmed or whatever. I forgot to mention, like, I was also being threatened to be dropped from a production for being a part of Jason's production as well. So that's something that we all had to go through, just like work through and like support each other in. Like, so much craziness was happening in Masquerade, and it's so fun to get to like enlighten everyone else about it, because look at how the movie turned out. And you're like, mm-hmm. I mean, that was easy peasy for them, obviously. Like, nothing had to have came up. But oh no, we were like, she was just like, I'll never work with you again if you do this.
I was getting threatening emails of being sued, threatening mm-hmm. to be sued.
Yeah.
So I was
It was crazy, man. But
I don't want to get into it.
That's gonna happen.
It was something we had to deal with.
yeah, but it's just gonna happen. Like, people are gonna support you, or they're gonna do the exact opposite, and we're noticing that as we climb up in our success, and it's kind of fun.
Right.
You know what? You guys should actually do Masquerade, the movies that made us. That would actually be a fun episode.
Yeah. Like a documentary type thing, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. But Northern Entertainment Group, they have a question. How did you come up with the main character's outfit? What was the process? Because it kicks ass.
Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah.
So, I wish our costumer and makeup artists were on here, because they were phenomenal.
Sarah? Yeah. Sarah out of Little Rock, she did like kind of the costuming for Alone and Masquerade. She kind of talked. I told her kind of what I was wanting for each character, and then she got with each individual actor, and basically kind of just went through their wardrobe and said, okay, this works, this doesn't, this works. For Sylvia, I believe that we bought shoes, or
bought two pairs of the same shoe because one had to go in an eye,
right? And so one pair went to the special effects people, and they rigged it to be able to go into the eye, and then the other pair she got to wear, and I believe she got to keep.
I did.
I don't remember if you got the dress.
I got the dress.
Yeah, you got the dress.
I feel like that's like a perk of lead, like. Take some wardrobe and some pieces. But I definitely feel like it was so symbolic of her character, though. Just the white representing the purity that we mm-hmm. are like pushing on you. And then just like it was very modern, like with a cut and off the shoulder. So it was just like she's got money. She's a supermodel. So something like that odes to like who she is and then who she wants to be portrayed as was. And then the red high heels, like. She's dangerous. So there was just so much into it that I just love so much. Yeah. And like with makeup, I think you might've mentioned it last week, but the makeup artist was so very mm-hmm. delicate in what he wanted me to portray. Like it was a full glam, which you normally never see on films. Like that's not something that you do, but for her character, it was appropriate. But mm-hmm. then as I got crazier, the makeup got a little crazier, and that's a very mm-hmm. tiny detail mm-hmm. that added so much to it.
I noticed that.
Definitely. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was planned perfectly the way it came out exactly how we planned. Mm-hmm. You know, throughout the whole film, she slowly gets like the makeup gets runnier and more crazy.
Mm-hmm. And so, like day one,
yeah, and like so, the start of the day for the torture scene, we have to end it where like she's already made two kills. She's killed Clint and then Hollywood. Who was his? I killed him so fast, I didn't get his name.
Jaren. His name was Jaren.
Yes. Yes. So by that time he had a start with like doing a full glam and then messing it up. And he was like, this feels so weird. Like, I don't feel like I should be doing it because I already had to be a little crazy. So the makeup had to be a little messed up. So sitting in the chair for this one.
And
was
even, even once he got on set after he did it, I think I even did it a little bit more.
Yeah. And then for continuity, he had to keep checking because there were times, like I said, like I kind of just like went in and started like free balling. So there were times that, you know, Charlie had to move around the camera and like, you know, follow me around. So if we had to start back over, then that makeup had to go back the way it was. So it was fun. Yeah.
That's great. And I just want to say hats is off to the special effects department and everything mm-hmm. for this film. Also to, and Crichton was telling me this on the review that he believed that it was actually the, that Clint is actually dead or the character is actually dead. Now, yes. I know that there's a ghost that follows her because of what we see at the very end. So the kill that she makes, is that every ghost that she comes into her self-consciousness? So, or
she actually has a line. It's during the torture scene. She interacts with the vision of Clint and she actually says his name. And then Lizzie says, she's like, Clint, you see my Clint? Like, who are you talking to? You said Clint. Are you talking about my Clint? And then Sylvia says, he's my Clint now. And then she goes on to say, you see, after I take somebody, they stay with me in here. And she points to her head with the knife. And right. So the ghosts you see are not really ghosts, and they're not actually there. They are like her best friend versions of these people that she takes, that she kills, that mm-hmm. she kills her.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, kind of explains Lizzie, like her cussing at the end is because that's my version of her.
Right.
Like she finally mm-hmm. said a cuss word as she refused to throughout the entire movie.
Right. And that's about putting mask on that, you know, like Dexter and everything, he puts a mask on that nobody else can see or anything like that. So yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, go on ahead, Crichton.
Well, and you know, like when I was watching this movie, it reminded me of like actual, like real serial killers. Like mm-hmm. I was comparing the character. I was like, God, this is kind of like a Ted Bundy, but John Gacy kind of thing. You know, I mean, but
she even mentions those names.
And I was gonna say, it's like I thought I heard that character say those names, you know. Yeah. But like,
she's excited about when it's all said and done, and her career is over. That her name is at the top of the list.
And like to me, the way it was not only acted but filmed, it's almost what I like to call the Alfred Hitchcock open to interpretation as the mm-hmm. viewer. You can say, oh my gosh, she reminds me of Ted Bundy, or she reminds me of this person, you know, like a, so you could be watching it with, you know, your best friend in the whole wide world, and y'all could come up with two different things. And to me, that is pure art and finest acting, directing, cast and crew. Oh my God, I can't praise it enough. That is awesome.
Thank you. I think that's the point though, too, because whenever you're seeing her, she normally is wearing a mask. So sometimes her masks get a little confusing. So she might be impersonating other people, or she might have, like, she has, it's more so objectives as opposed to, you know, going off her feelings. It's just like, okay, I want them to feel like I'm charming. So that's what they're going to feel. And I'll do what I need to do. Or I want them to be scared. So I'm going to make them scared. So it's more so like, what do I want from them? And how do I achieve it? And then it ends up coming off in many different ways, which is so fun to hear about, because that's how I felt when portraying her. And then you feeling that way. Yay.
Right. Well,
but yeah, go on ahead, Crane. I know that you have
no, I mean, say. And I like, and also, I just a real quick thing, and then I'll let John take it. But, so, and I guess this is more towards Jason, but you know, sometimes the lead gets more publicity, and sometimes the director gets more publicity, but you know, there's a saying. It takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to make a movie. Yes. And really, with the Arkansas village that made this movie, what would you say to other people that are out there that has their own little crew together and they're just trying to figure it all out? What advice would you give to them and their village to say, you know what, keep doing your thing?
Yeah, it's kind of hard. The first thing I'd say is don't quit. I think perseverance is in most cases is a better trait to have than talent. Talent's great, but if you are not dedicated and you persevere through the no's and the obstacles, then the talent isn't going to do you any good. So that's the first thing I'd say is don't be discouraged. Don't quit. The second thing I would say is you're absolutely right. It's important to have a team and a village and to build that. But when you're starting, you're going to look to your friends first, right? It's like right. People you know who have similar, interests and stuff like that. But as you move, you know, and you have to balance the friendship with the talent, the people around you. And it's a hard thing to do. And through this process, there have been people who were kind of friends, you know, and they, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
I make films.
Yeah. No, it's a hard line. It's just be careful.
Never give up and always be careful and always surround yourself with good people is from what I'm picking up.
And setting boundaries.
Yes, that is it. Yeah. People who are passionate, who share your passion, who are also talented, and who support you. Those three things are the biggest things to look for when you build your village or your family.
Right.
So, and I think what we've built here has been it's been amazing, because this journey in this last 3 years has been awesome, because we just keep meeting people in different areas special effects people, sound people, you know, and it just keeps growing and getting bigger and bigger. And I'm so thankful.
And guys who play speakers right on their front porch. You know, I mean, you know, hey.
Can't ask for that.
Right. And Olivia, what about you? What advice would you give?
I definitely agree with don't give up, obviously, but from an actor standpoint, that's so essential for us, because it's so easy to get discouraging. Even like right now, you know, it's a slow time, honestly. Pilot season is kind of here, kind of about to get heavier. So there aren't as many projects. as far as like projects being in the state, we haven't seen much so far. So I think that it's just important to keep training. So that I was reading that the difference between like people who make it and people who don't is really luck, but luck is when opportunity meets you and you're just ready. So yeah. It's just like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is falling in my lap. And lucky for me, I've been training daily. So it's not even like this fell in my lap, but I wasn't able to catch it. So I think that I've just made sure that I continue to train and grow as an actress so that my intentions are set and, you know, things start aligning as they should. So I think every actor should do the same. I think that we should just make sure that we're in it for the right reasons also, because intentions, like they definitely shine through in your projects also. So if you're just, you know, making a project to get recognition, it might not be as good. But if you're making a project because you're passionate about film and you want to showcase the talent surrounding you, then that really shines through also. So having good intentions and staying up on your game and not quitting.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah, there's no such thing as an overnight success.
No.
Like when something like that looks like it happens, we never see the amount of preparation that person had when that opportunity came along.
Yeah.
They weren't around during pre-production, you know?
Yeah.
I do have one more question, and it's from Northern Entertainment Group. After that, we'll close out and let everybody follow you on all your social medias and stuff like that in a few minutes. But Northern Entertainment Group's asked, sorry for asking so many questions, but the trailer process, how did you choose what to put in the trailer and find the tone to convey to the viewers?
For the trailer, I worked on the trailer with Alex, our editor, and the number one thing was to protect the twist, protect Olivia's character. We cut it in a way to where you see her at the beginning, you see the clown mask behind her. We see a little bit of Clint. And then you introduce some of the other characters in his gang talking about like robbing the place. So we cut it to where we don't show a whole lot of the end. We highlighted the masks because the masks looked fantastic. So those were the key things about the trailer, was protecting the twist and highlighting the masks.
Such a tease.
And to be honest, Jason, with you, to be honest with you, Jason, even when I'm trying to do a non-spoiler review, I don't know if you, it was hard not to spoil stuff because that was like the fastest review that I've done. It was like, I do a podcast. I don't do YouTube videos anymore where they're short unless it's like an actual trailer reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay, I got to make this short. I got to make this sweet without having to spoil anything. Once I'm able to spoil it, that's whenever I'm going to let it all out. And I'm glad that I did it with Crichton. But I just want to say thank you so much to the both of y'all to let us have the privilege to interview you and everything. Yeah. And I hope to see you again, Olivia, on more of my shows and stuff.
Thank you.
Even if it's not interviewing, I'm hoping that we can collaborate some other time as well.
Absolutely. This was really fun. Forth. Yeah,
it was.
It's fun having these conversations and getting to collaborate with people who are interested and like-minded. So let's keep having them.
Yes, for sure.
And John, I kept it PG.
Yeah,
you did.
You made it through a whole entire hour, Crichton.
I'm so proud of you.
I know, right? That means I don't have to go to confession. You know?
But there's always tomorrow.
That's a new game.
There's still one homage to a classic horror film in Masquerade that nobody has. I think I told you what it was, John, didn't I?
You actually kept this quiet even from me.
Okay, so there's still one in there that nobody's gotten yet. And for anybody, the first person who tells me what it is will either get a free DVD of Masquerade, or if you already have a DVD of Masquerade, then you will be invited to the set of Lonely Echoes.
That's going to be fun. That's a good one.
We didn't even mention this, but Masquerade is the second film in a planned four-film series called The Alone Saga. Alone was first, then Masquerade. The next one is Lonely Echoes, and then the last one will be called Unmasked. And spoiler, Sylvia comes back.
Yay!
Awesome. Okay, so with that being said, guys, I'm going to go on ahead, ladies first. Olivia, where can everybody follow you at on your social medias and all that other stuff?
Yeah, okay, so follow me on Instagram at Olivia Disney Actress, and the same for Facebook, Olivia Disney Actress. I'm posting a lot. I'm trying to get a little bit better and more consistent, but start following me now because I definitely feel like with consistency, growth is going to happen, and I'll try to interact with everyone. And then also, I just want to say, like, we have a screening this Sunday at 4 in Searcy. So if this is within driving distance for anyone watching or that's going to be listening later, this Sunday we'll have an opportunity for you to come and watch it in person, and then we'll all be there and open for Q&A and pictures and signings and DVD selling. So, and then, Jason, don't forget to mention our film festival news also.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, but go ahead.
We've been accepted to 12 film festivals so far. The movie has only been in film festivals for 3 weeks now, and we've been accepted to 12. We've won 5 awards so far, 3 for best horror short, 1 for best acting, and 1 for best screenplay. Very exciting. I'm super excited. One of the festivals that we were accepted to is Days of the Dead Horror Film Festival in Atlanta, and it's going to take place during their horror convention, and we were invited to be guests there and have a table where we can interact with the fans, sell our movies and whatever else we might have.
That's just crazy and so amazing.
I'm very excited about it. It's my first time being invited as a guest to a horror film festival or a horror convention. So it's a dream come true for me. So, and Olivia, we're very, very excited about being able to go.
Congratulations to the
both. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Crichton, where can everybody follow you at on your social medias and everything else?
At just type in Google Crichton Films, you'll find me.
Okay,
that's simple. You got a really long thing, John. John, you sit here for about 5 minutes, and I'm like, I can't live up to this expectation.
Don't feel bad. Even Charlie can't even do it. I'll end up typing him everything to say, and he can't even. And it's hard for him to keep up with it. But anyways, for everybody that wants to follow me, just go ahead and follow me on all social medias at Movie Lovers TV Loves Tonight on Facebook and on Instagram underneath the same brand name, of course, on Pinterest as well. If you want to go ahead and get yourself an audio only podcast of our episodes, you can get that where you guys get your major podcast from. And also too, I also am doing a charity event with Two Blur Girls Podcast. The link is in the link below. But what we're doing is we're doing Scentsies. So you get a Scentsy, $5 to $10. $5 to $10 goes to the Children of St. Jude's Hospital. All proceeds go to the Children of St. Jude's Hospital. Then, of course, if you want to, go on ahead and follow me on Good Pods. Good Pods is a great place where you can actually interact with me. You can reply. We can reply back and forth and stuff like that. Rate individual episodes. Tell us what you think about them. And also, too, you guys can go on ahead, even if you don't are not a podcaster or a content creator, you can listen to your podcast on Good Pods as well. Then, of course, if you want to rate us or anything like that, just go to Apple Podcasts and, of course, on Spotify. Then, if you want to follow me on Twitter, just go underneath Movie Lovers Unit. And then, of course, on TikTok at Movie Lovers Unit Zero. If you want to donate to us, all you have to do is go to GoFundMe.com/Movie Lovers Podcast. And that's how you can donate $5 to $10 to me. But simply clicking that like button, clicking that share button, and also too, subscribing below also helps us out too. And smashing that little bell in the bottom right hand corner to allow you guys to know when we have something new here. And of course, if you're a sponsor and would like to be on the show, just reach out to me at MovieLoversUnite@gmail.com. And that's everywhere you can reach me at. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, I will have a show, but it's into DBA right now. But I promise you that I will have something going on, and I'll actually put that in our community section of our YouTube channel for you guys to know what we have going on. So, and then the J-Man's Movie Cave, he says, hey, Jason.
Yeah, I like Jason. But, he's a good guy.
But anyways, guys, congratulations on your success. Crichton and I.
Hey, can I do my social media stuff?
Yeah, go on ahead.
So I'm trying to make an effort to do better. I've traditionally been a Facebook guy and just a Facebook guy, but I am on Instagram. It's Jason.Stephen, spelled STEPHEN.Pitts. And then I'm also on Twitter at Jason Pitts on Twitter. And then you can just search me up for Facebook. I'm not sure what the handle is on Facebook, okay. But yeah.
Well, congratulations once again to the both of y'all. And thank you, Crichton, for joining me for this interview as well, for conducting the interview with me. I do appreciate it. And everyone, just enjoy the rest of your night and everything. I hope everyone had a great time. And always until next time, guys, it's been real. It's been fun. Can't wait to do this
again. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Y'all are very welcome.
High five.